Welcome to the immediate reaction show for UFC Atlantic City. This is the show where I record my immediate reaction for every single matchup as it concludes, stitch that bad boy up and drop it as a one show for you guys as soon as the fights wrap up so I can give you my unfiltered and immediate thoughts for every single matchup as well as showcase which odds that cash for every single fight and see if you, the viewer, were able to cash on any of those juicy props that end up hitting as well. I love doing this show. It's a great way for me to just quickly analyze what just transpired and take in the post-fight interview as well in terms of if anybody calls out anybody or anything that they mention throughout it. So love this show. Love dropping it for you guys. And I appreciate the support that we've been getting thus far. Now, the UFC wasted no time. They already got one fight out of the way. As soon as 7 o'clock hit, they had both fighters in the cage. So let's quickly just talk about that. Kaolin Lorain versus Angel Pacheco. Lorain had a solid start to the first round, hurting Pacheco on numerous occasions. And then Pacheco really started to go on harder in the latter half of that first round, bloodying the nose of Lorain. But unfortunately for him, it ended up being a Lorain show for the rest of that fight as we saw Kaolin land a takedown in the second round. Pummel Pacheco, nearly getting a stoppage there as well. We saw Pacheco obviously roll his ankle at the beginning of the third round, it looked like, and Lorain was obviously really battering that leg and following up with some big shots afterwards as well. Again, Pacheco's durability showing off once again, but it's ultimately Lorain who ends up getting his hand raised on the scorecards by decision. Now let's quickly look at the odds that cash. Lorain, one of the bigger favorites on the card, comes through at minus 480 by decision, plus 240 and over 2.5 cashes at plus 125. Now, Lorain didn't get a post-fight interview, but he did make sure that as soon as the camera was on him, he was able to get close enough and utter a few words, specifically Raul Rosas Jr., let's get it, Dick Lips. I love it. I love that call out. Straight to the point. Throws an insult in there. I don't know if the UFC will match them up right off the jump here, but I would love to see that fight between these two guys. Obviously, Lorain dropped his UFC debut to Taylor Lapolis. Huge step up in competition for him, especially in his UFC debut. But he showed off in this matchup what makes him so dangerous and how he could potentially be successful in the UFC moving forward. Great call out, great performance. Lorain gets his hand raised by unanimous decision. And one of the craziest and weirdest finishes that we've ever seen in the history of mixed martial arts, Jacob Malkoon picks up his first win in the UFC by finish as he defeats Andre Petrosky in the second round. Now, on the scorecards, apparently, or not apparently, but it is factual, all three judges scored the first round for Petrosky, although it seemed the majority of that round was won by Malkoon. Obviously, when Petrosky was able to hurt him and drop him, we saw, you know, that's likely what the judges ended up favoring. But it seemed to me that the tide was starting to turn. And then weirdly, we see Petrosky go for a takedown. And upon further review, it looks like there was a short left hook that Malkoon landed just as Petrosky's head hit the hip of Malkoon. And then from there, you see Malkoon kind of shuck him off. And it's clear that Petrosky is rattled and his equilibrium is completely off. He falls face first, eats a nasty soccer kick to the body, and the referee eventually steps in and stops the fight. But one of the weirdest finishes we've ever seen. I do want to credit Kaposa Hitman. If you, obviously one of the, you know, greatest follows on MMA Twitter in terms of pointing out that short left hook that seemed to hit almost the back of the head of Andre Petrosky, which is still deemed as legal considering that Petrosky kind of went into that and it wasn't a targeted shot. But I think that mixed with the impact of his head hitting the hip of Malkoon caused Petrosky to really just lose his equilibrium and ultimately lead to the finish by Malkoon. I know Malkoon's fired up, not the way that you really want to be celebrating a fight with it happening it so weirdly. If we could clearly point that finish towards the left hook that he landed, then sure, but very weird finish. I'm not mad. I had a lock of the night play on Malkoon here. I really thought he was going to start taking over in the second and third rounds. His striking looked improved using that jab straight down the pipe. Striking defense still needs a tad bit of work, but I think that this is a style that he could be successful with in the future. But regardless, happy that he ends up in getting the dub here. Let's check out the odds that cashed here. here. Mancun, obviously favorite, coming in at minus 245 cashes. By knockout, plus 430. Round two, plus 850. Round two by knockout, plus 1300. And the under 2.5 cashes at plus 145. Again, very weird circumstance in terms of how the fight ended up finishing. Mancun feeding into the crowd, telling him to boom just because he's happy and excited to finally be fighting in front of a crowd. But I'm curious to see how they match him up moving forward. You know, he's a guy that's clearly improving and very difficult to deal with, especially when he gets his grappling going. You know, the grappling dominance, the relentlessness, the pace, the pressure, the cardio is going to be a very tough puzzle for a lot of opponents to solve, especially if they're unable to knock out Mancun early, as one opponent has already done in his UFC debut. That was Phil Hawes. But Mancun improving at a steady rate. Good win for him here. He gets a second round finish over Andre Petroski. Many expected if this fight were to go into the final round, it would likely be Anton Turkali that gets his hand raised. Unfortunately, Turkali eats a big shot from Ibo Aslan just over a minute and a half into the final frame, gets his equilibrium completely shook up, and the referee Gary Copeland eventually steps in and stops the fight. Big win for Ibo Aslan, exacting revenge on the guy that handed him his only professional loss. It's a good win for Aslan, but even better for him in terms of his confidence, being able to go into deep rounds and still end up getting his hand raised. My analysis of him going into this matchup, as well as his contender series fight, is that he has no gas tank and is unable to really have much success late. But you could see the maturity in his game. He's being a little bit more patient, and he's waiting for that 1-2 down the pipe, utilizing his jab very well. That calf kick and leg kick was working for him. I wish he went toward it a little bit more, but he stayed patient, he stayed disciplined, and then eventually the knockout came to him in the third and final round. You know, tough loss for Anton Turkali, who suffers four in a row now, likely marks the end of his UFC run. I feel bad for the guy. You know, I feel he's much more talented than the OM4 in the UFC represents him, but that's the way that it goes. If you're unable to get, you know, a win in four fights, more than likely the UFC is just going to be like, you know what, maybe you don't deserve to be on this platform. But good win for Ibo Aslan. Let's check out the odds of that cast here, because there were definitely some juicy ones considering how it went down. Aslan moneyline comes through at minus 125. By knockout, plus 110 were the obvious spots there. But round three, plus 1400. Round three, knockout, plus 1500. And then the over 1.5 cash is at plus 125. I'm very excited to see how they match Aslan moving on forward. I love this post-fight statement there. I'm not here to win. I'm here to knock people out, which pretty much means that you're here to win still. But, fun addition to the light heavyweight division. I don't know if he makes it that far unless he continues to improve his gas tank management, his ability to put out effective striking rather than just looking to knock his opponents out. If he can build that 1-2 down the pipe and sprinkle in the leg kick, keeping it super basic, he could be very dangerous, right? We saw his improved takedown defense, the awareness of any time Turkali was trying to change levels and get this fight to the ground, dug under hooks immediately, pivoted off. Even that small amount of time that Turkali was able to push him up against the cage, we saw Aslan dig the underhooks and then eventually sneak his way out of those bad positions and then get back out into distance. Make those small incremental changes and improvements, and who knows where Aslan could eventually be in this current state, in this current form that he's in. I don't think he cracks the top 10, but he has the tools and he has the potential to become better and possibly crack that top 10. But this was a good way for him to start off his UFC career. And again, exacting revenge over Anton Turkali, the lone person to hand him a defeat. So once again, round three, knockout, Ibo Aslan over Anton Turkali. Largely a dominant performance from Denis Bazukia. He eventually gets the third round knockout victory over Conor Matthews, 22 seconds into the third and final round. Now, I had obviously Bazukia as a small play here at minus 125. Was surprised that there was action on Matthews, bringing him down to closer to minus 110, minus 115 come fight time. But I still felt just as confident in Bazukia to be the more complete striker in this matchup and to have a good enough defensive grappling game in case Matthews wanted to use that approach. I knew Matthews was a physical fighter that likes to utilize a lot of power and likes to outmuscle his opponent. opponents in those grappling and clinch exchanges, which is why he's been able to beat up a lot of guys on the regional scene. But we knew as soon as he made it to the UFC, he was going to be fighting guys that were technically better than him and more disciplined than him. And that's what we saw with Dennis Bazukia tonight. I will say, there were some moments where I felt a little bit queasy with Bazukia being so confident and comfortable alongside the cage, but it seemed like Matthews was a little bit muzzled considering that he kept getting hit with counters anytime he tried to explode on Bazukia there. But good win for Bazukia, staying calm, staying within himself, and then eventually seeing that knockout come to fruition in the opening minute of that third round. Beautiful performance from him. Still got some question marks. Obviously, you know, when you bet a fighter, it all depends on the style matchup he has ahead of him that weekend, and luckily for us this weekend it was a good stylistic matchup for him. But let's see how they match him up moving forward. I think they wanted to match him up against Bogdazarian a few fights ago, if I'm not mistaken, or sorry, that was the fight that they actually had on the Contender Series. But you see, like, those matchups when guys have the power and have the aggressiveness and don't mind getting hit with a counter or two, they will be able to go out there and break a guy like Bazukia. But good win for Bazukia. Tonight is about him. Let's check out the odds that cash. Bazukia moneyline closed at minus 115. For him to win by knockout was plus 410. For it to happen in round three, plus 1400. Throw those two things together, you get plus 1800. And then the under 2.5 cash is at plus 135. I know Connor Matthews will be back stronger. This will be a great learning experience for him. But I don't know how long of a UFC career he'll have, especially if he continues to fight more talented and more technically better fighters than him, as we saw tonight. But tonight belonged to Dennis Bazukia. Good win for him as he knocks out Connor Matthews in the third and final round. It's been a long time since we've seen Julio Arce in the cage, as with Herbert Burns as well, but Arce stamps his return as he finishes Herbert Burns in the second round after showcasing stellar takedown defense, good patience, great technique, and then eventually a nasty killing streak as he saw Burns was slowing down, he was fading, and he put his foot on the gas and got Burns out of there. Great work from Arce. We knew this about Burns, right? The guy goes out there and he just empties the gas tank, and it didn't even seem like a very high output first round. You know, it just seems like Burns has this issue. If he's unable to get his wrestling going, the guy just fades. He breaks and he looks for a way out. And that's what seemed to happen here, as Arce was able to overwhelm him and get that second round stoppage. Great win, great return for Arce. He said he came off of an ACL injury, ACL surgery. I believe the last time we saw him was November of 2022. I could be slightly off in terms of a couple months or so, but it's been a long time. But I've been big on Arce for a long time. We know his cap is roughly around that top 15 to top 10 range. He's 34, 35 years old. He's getting up there. Let's see him get a little bit more comfortable at 145 pounds before we try to cap what his ceiling is at this point in his career. But that was a great win for him. All right, let's check out the odds that cashed. Obviously, Arce, big chalk here, coming in at minus 370, comes through by knockout plus 120, round two plus 400, round two knockout plus 550, and the under 1.5 cashes with about 30 seconds on the clock at plus 100. Once again, great work from Julio Arce. I love everything about the kid. Let's see if he can get a run going and stay a little bit more active now that he is fully healed and recovered from his injuries. Big win for Arce, second round stoppage over Herbert Burns. Probably in one of the closest fights we've ever seen, it was ultimately Vernajandy Robo who ends up getting her hand raised on the scorecards by unanimous decision. I felt we would see a little bit more handiwork from from Godinez, but it seemed like the stinging jab of Jandy Roba and the reach advantage she had was really causing Godinez some issues. Godinez was forced to, you know, obviously she was hyper aware of the eventual takedowns that were going to be coming her way, she was unable to successfully get off on her strikes because she was unable to really close that distance and put too much power into her punches, allowing Jandy Roba to obviously get those close clinch and grappling situations that the judges ultimately saw in her favor. A very weird and close fight. I really expected Godinez to run away with this matchup, especially knowing that she should be able to stop most of the takedowns, which She kind of did, but then when she was on the feet and in open range, she did not get off on as much damage as I expected. But that just is high accreditation to Verna Jandiroba, her experience, her high-level game, her striking. Obviously, really not there, but she had the wherewithal in terms of sticking her jab out there as often as she did, blooding the nose of Godinez, and then eventually waiting for those grappling opportunities to show themselves to her. So good win for Jandiroba, continuing to stay relevant in this top 10 of the division. Former Invicta champion, you know, 15-0 coming into the UFC originally. She's had some ups and downs, but this was a great win for her over a streaking prospect in Lupita Godinez. All right, let's check out the odds that cashed her. Jandiroba, I believe the first underdog of the night, cashing at plus 180, by decision plus 380, and then the over 2.5 obviously cashes at minus 310. Great work from Jandiroba. Godinez needs to get back to the drawing board, figure out where she went wrong. She seems like a fighter that's, you know, capable of making a title run. She has all the tools. It's just about putting them together in the cage and knowing when she's in a bad position, working out of them. Like, I don't know why she decided to play footsies as long as she did in that second round. Maybe she felt it was a safe enough position that it would keep Jandiroba from getting to a dominant position or a more dominant position, which is why she just stayed there as long as she did. But there were certain spots where I felt like she should have worked out of it rather than played with Jandiroba in those spots. But again, veteran type performance from Jandiroba to get her hand raised here as she pulls off the unanimous decision victory over Lupita Godinez. If you're trying to show somebody who Nate the Train Landwehr is, this is the fight you show them. The man goes out there, takes a little bit of a beating, but does not count himself out. Eventually, in the same round that he's severely hurt in, still coming back, landing a perfectly placed uppercut to hurt Jamal Emmers very badly, and then following up with some ground and pound to get him out of there. That was my big concern in terms of taking the chalk on Jamal Emmers. We know he is maybe the technically better fighter, physically the superior fighter as well in terms of the speed and power that he brings to the table, but you cannot teach or work in the gym what Nate Landwehr is great at, and that's the ability to just stay in a fight. During the walk to the octagon, Bisping was talking about the fact that Landwehr has said in the past that he doesn't compromise with pain. You know, he goes out there and he just does his thing and he produces these types of fights. Absolutely insane work from Landwehr to, you know, bounce back as well. You know, this is a guy that's he took a loss to Dan Ige last time around, but is always a fan favorite. Always goes out there and puts on a war against a lot of his opponents. And I knew Emmers had a little bit of flakiness in him if he was unable to get Landwehr out of there early. And that's how Landwehr ends up coming through. I really expected Emmers to put him out. And I'm surprised none of those shots actually ended up doing the job. But Landwehr going to do Nate Landwehr things. Absolutely insane. All right, let's talk about the odds that cast here. Nate Landwehr, back-to-back dogs now cashing with him coming in at plus 160 by knockout, plus 500. Round one, plus 900. Round one KO, plus 1400. And the under 2.5 cashing with relative ease here at plus 110. Nate Landwehr is not a guy that's going to make a march to the title or be in contendership anytime soon, but we know if we just put him in there with another guy that's willing to slug it out with him, more often than not, they're going to get fight of the night honors, or someone will get performance of the night, and that's likely what's headed Nate Landwehr's way after this great performance. Look for Landwehr, how they match him up moving forward, but tonight he goes out there and pulls off the upset with a first-round knockout over Jamal Emmers. After Nate Landwehr lit the arena on fire, Chidi Njokwani and Reese McKee bring it to a screeching halt in probably one of the more boring fights that we've had on the card here. McKee, you can't blame him. He was trying to get out of the striking range where Njokwani clearly had an advantage, and he was trying to get the fight to the ground a little bit too hard and didn't really have much of a plan B as Njokwani was letting him up on the feet, landing perfect leg kicks as well, repeated leg kicks that obviously caused a welt on the lead leg of McKee. And then we saw Njokwani go out there and win the fight on the scorecards. I thought, you know, I'll be honest, I wasn't paying the closest of attention because it was becoming very boring, and I am starting to feel the effects of a long day of watching MMA since Cage Warrior started off around noon Eastern time. But I thought Njokwani was the one landing more meaningful blows, more meaningful damage, and he probably should have got his hand raised on the scorecards regardless. Scorecards were all over the place. We had a 29-28 for McKee, 30-27 for Njokwani, and then ultimately a 29-28 for Njokwani that got him the split decision victory here. I don't know. Let's forget about that as quickly as we possibly can. Let's talk about the odds at cash, though. Anjaquani moneyline comes through at minus 150. By decision, coming through at plus 700, showcasing that he can have a good enough gas tank at 170 pounds to go 15 minutes if he needs to. And then the over 1.5 cash is at plus 110. Yeah, I feel bad for McKee. The guy's talented, but it doesn't seem like he's made a cut out for the UFC. He'll probably end up getting cut after this. And then Anjaquani, you know, new life down at 170 pounds. Let's see if he can get a string of momentum going and if he can make any noise at this 170-pound division. But tonight, he ends up winning by split decision over Reese McKee. What a performance from Canadian Kyle Nelson as he goes out there and knocks out Bill Algeo 4 minutes into the first round. Surprising result considering a lot of people had Algeo winning this fight, including myself. I thought his unorthodox movement and range management would allow him to keep Nelson at bay, but Nelson did a great job in terms of masking some of his shots and landing with power, eventually hurting and rocking Algeo. I will say this, I'm trying to do it without any bias, but although Algeo was hurt, I thought you have to give him a little bit more rope, and I thought that the referee stepped in a little bit too early there. We've seen Algeo come back from worse, but, you know, standing TKOs, not a lot of people like them. Normally, I don't push back whenever there's a standing TKO, but I felt that Algeo was moving in enough. He was eating a lot of shots as well, but regardless, good win for Kyle Nelson to continue this wild streak that he's on. I think it's a 3-fight winning streak now, and he was a near plus 200 underdog in almost every single one of them. Crazy what kind of confidence and what he has going from him here. And I'm curious if he can continue this run up. You know, he's been beating guys like Fernando Padilla, Blake Builder, and now the biggest win of his career against Bill Algeo and doing it by finish. Insane. Big things for Kyle Nelson if he manages to keep this up. All right, let's check out the odds that cash. Nelson, money line comes through at plus 215. Now, check out these juicy odds. By knockout, plus 1,100. Round one, plus 2,100. And round one KO, plus 3,000. Under 2.5 cash is at plus 165 as well. Shout out to anybody that was backing Kyle Nelson there. Again, big numbers on him to especially get the knockout, something that he was highly reliant on throughout the beginning of his career. And it comes to for him once again here as he takes advantage of the unorthodox striking style of Algeo, countering him effectively and then knocking him out, or at least TKOing him here in the first round. Good win for Kyle Nelson. Let's see if he can keep this run going. It was an inadvertent eye poke from Ruzibov that caused Cedriquez Dumas to turn away and try to get a stoppage from the referee to try to get his wits back about him. But he was not afforded that opportunity, and Ruzibov took full advantage of it, hurting Dumas very badly and then eventually dropping him and landing ground and pound to eventually get the victory. Very unfortunate end to that fight. There was a lot of talk about this fight. A lot of people thinking that Ruzibov was going to do just that, but it's unfortunate that it came with a bit of an asterisk. And my opinion, you know, I had no action on this fight. My prediction was Ruzibov, but I didn't like seeing it transpire the way that it did. You know, I think it's one of those situations where you got to take replay into account, and you can clearly see the hand and the finger from Ruzibov go in Dumas's eye. And that, in my opinion, should at least either warrant a restart, which obviously we know is not a part of the rules at all, or at least possible no contest, right? Like, it's clear there was an eye poke, and I believe the actual rule is if the referee doesn't see anything, you got to fight on. But I think with, you know, at the day and age that we're currently in, you got to go out there and utilize replay as best as you can to showcase these types of situations. But regardless, win for Ruzibov here, goes out there, does what a lot of people expected him to do, to take Dumas out of there quickly. I still have some questions about Ruzibov, which is why I didn't take the shot on him at minus 220, just strictly a prediction. But man, the guy's scary. 6'5", middleweight, has some decent power down the pipe, but I think he gets a little bit repetitive and starts to become predictable in terms of some of the shots that he's looking to land from distance. I look forward to seeing how they line him moving forward. We gotta, you know, from a unbiased perspective, when you're looking to bet his next fight, try not to take too much away from the fact that he's finished his last two opponents. We've seen this time and time again, especially with one of his teammates, Joe Pyfer, a guy that continuously goes out there and finishes people. When the first round finish does not happen, what does it look like? Especially when he's fighting a more complete opponent. So he calls out Gerald Meerschaert. Decent call out, in my opinion. I think that's a fight that he can end up sniping Meerschaert down the pipe once again. But as he continues to climb the middleweight rankings, that's something you got to worry about and think about as well. All right, let's check out the odds.cast here. Ruziboev moneyline comes through at minus 220. By knockout, plus 270. Round one, plus 160. Round one KO, plus 500. And then the under 1.5 cashes at minus 130. Unfortunate loss there for Dumas. I believe that snapped a two-fight winning streak for him now. And Ruziboev on a two-fight winning streak of his own. Let's see how the UFC matches him moving up forward. And I would love to see the Mearshart matchup, if I'm being honest. Good veteran test for him, a very winnable fight for him as well, but let's see what he can do against a guy like GM3, who has a ton of high level experience as well. But tonight belongs to Ruziboev as he goes out there and gets the first round knockout with some controversy over Cedricus Dumas. It's been a very weird night of eye pokes, and once again this fight becomes marred by eye pokes, and we get Chris Weidman in the cage winning by knockout after he double eye poked Bruno Silva, who fell to the floor in pain from that. And I see a lot of people talking about, oh, he shouldn't have fallen to the floor. Those are two really bad eye pokes. And if you're getting, you know, you're going to likely be mauled after that. You're going to want to cover up, especially if you can't see and in that much pain. So I don't really understand that reasoning. And then the referee calls off the fight and they ultimately rule it a knockout inside the cage. So in terms of betting, gambling, wagering, or anything like that, buy decision tickets probably will not be honored as that is the eventual decision that they end up coming to. So quickly to talk about it, Weidman pokes the eyes of Bruno Silva. Bruno Silva goes down. Referee stops the fight. Ultimately gets called a TKO announced by Bruce Buffer, which is what bookies and online sites, all of that stuff, they only go by what is announced in the cage. So TKO tickets will be cashed in this aspect. Very unfortunate spot there for Bruno Silva, who repeatedly got his eye poked. Chris Weidman trying to say, oh, hey, I got my eye poked too, but clearly it was not as much as Bruno Silva was suffering throughout that fight. I think that was the third time that he had suffered it. And then also offering up the advice to Bruno Silva to not fall to the ground in pain, you know. It's so nonsensical. So after the fight is official with Bruce Buffer calling it in the cage, they have the post-fight interview with Chris Weidman. Weidman saying, you know, he could still be competitive. He's still getting better at 39 years old. Absolutely insane. You know, I think, just picturing him with anybody in the top five in the middleweight division is not a good look, in my opinion. I'm a big Chris Weidman fan. I met the dude over 10 years ago, right before he fought Anderson Silva. You know, I've had dinner with the guy through just, you know, people that I was close with and stuff. So I love the guy. I was cheering for him as well. But this is not it. 39 years old, middleweight, fighting, you know, the top guys. Even Kamaru Usman coming up to 185 pounds would likely be Chris Weidman at this stage of his career. Not a good look. So after the decision is read, the broadcast, after the post-fight interview, the broadcast, Brendan Fitzgerald says that the review officials officially went to a decision, technically a technical decision, considering that the fight was already in the third round. So they would score the first round, the second round, and whatever was made of the third round. And, you know, obviously Weidman won the first two rounds. It seemed like he was winning the third round as well. So regardless, if it went to a decision, it probably would have went Weidman's way. Just such a weird fight. A lot of asterisks, a lot of controversy. I feel bad for Bruno Silva. If you guys have been watching him during his regional run, his Russian run, he was in a lot of fights similar to this where he was getting out grappled and out grinded through the first two rounds. And then he manages to come back in the third and fourth rounds to normally finish his opponents and knock them out. And you got to give the guy the opportunity. You know, I know it wasn't really going his way, but you got to give him the opportunity to go the full 15 minutes to try to get a legitimate result out of that. Unfortunate. But again, bittersweet win for Chris Weidman, who finally gets his hand raised after a very tough run that he's been on, not to mention the leg injury that he had and bouncing back from that. All right, let's check out the odds at cash here. Plus 175 on Weidman moneyline comes through as the underdog. By knockout, plus 1,100. Round three, plus 1,800. Round three, knockout, plus 4,700. Absolutely insane to see that number. And then the over 1.5 cashing at minus 135. Gotta really feel for Bruno Silva, who was wearing his emotions on his sleeve during that whole kerfuffle. I want to be happy for Weidman, but it's just such an unfortunate circumstance of how that whole thing went down. But Weidman gets his win. Looks like he doesn't want to hang him up anytime soon, but I think a rude awakening is coming for him very shortly. And I'll also say this. He's probably getting paid a solid six figures to show up anyway, right? This guy was a star for the UFC when he was a middleweight champion. You know, he's always bringing in eyeballs. He's a fan favorite. So I'm sure win or lose, he still wants to go out there and compete and collect a couple more paychecks before his body is really withered and gone away. You know, the fact that he got a win here probably prolongs his career by another fight or two. And you're talking about another, you know, $400,000, $500,000 that he's probably going to get paid win or lose in these spots combined, I mean, over his next two fights. So, you know, if you're in that position, do you fight and collect a paycheck? I don't see why not. So you got to look at it from all angles. But regardless, Weidman ends up coming out victorious in a very controversial matchup by a third round TKO, as bookies will likely settle that line. But in the record books, it ends up going down as a technical decision over Bruno Silva. And arguably the biggest win of his MMA career, Joaquin Buckley goes out there and knocks out number 11 ranked welterweight Vicente Luque. And it was probably the most unorthodox and weird, un-Luque-like performance that we've ever seen of him. To see him go out there and pretty much pull guard and not throw anything in return, he seemed to have his legs in a good enough position to try to push Buckley away or at least wrap him up in his guard, but he was seemed content in terms of just eating damage from Buckley as he continued to throw ground and pound. Buckley was landing a lot of big shots, and once the referee started to get closer and closer, it was obvious that the referee was going to stop it, and that's where you saw Buckley really start to let his hands go, and that's where the referee ended up stepping in. Again, very un-Luque-like performance from him. I'm sure, I know Buckley has a lot of power. Maybe there was a shot earlier that I'm just not paying too much attention to that rocked Luque that caused him to give up that type of position and just pretty much allow Buckley to pound him out. It was a very weird performance, but credit to Joaquin Buckley going out there. Biggest spot for him as well to really put the pressure on Luque. Close first round, Buckley seemed to be landing the bigger shots, if anything, and then eventually getting that second round TKO. He wants to fight St. Louis. I believe that's where he's from, if I'm not mistaken. You know, the UFC just announced Derek Lewis as the main event against Rodrigo Nascimento for that card. Horrible main event. They could easily plug in Buckley against another high-level welterweight and potentially save that main event and give us a better main event for that card. But tonight, Buckley does a great job showcasing that he deserves to be in the top 15 of this welterweight division. How far can he take it? I'm not sure. All right, let's quickly check out the odds that cast here. Buckley, moneyline comes to a plus 100, slight underdog there. By knockout, plus 260. Round two, plus 900. Round two, knockout, plus 1,000. And then the under 2.5 cashes at minus 165. It is always rough when we have these 10 p.m. main card start times, as it is currently 12:45 a.m. from when I am recording this, and the main event is very shortly about to kick off. But good Lord, I need those 7 p.m. Eastern main cards again, because I don't know if I can keep doing this goddamn thing. Regardless, let's see what the main event gives us. Hopefully it should be an entertaining one. We'll see how it goes. A complete shutout from the French woman as she goes out there in 50-45s. Erin Blanchfield to win a unanimous decision victory. Manon Firo is clearly the next in line for the flyweight title. Unfortunately, she's going to have to wait a long time considering the Ultimate Fighter is being coached by current champion Alexa Grasso and her rival Valentina Shevchenko, who she is 1-0-1 against over their last two fights. So they have some beef to settle first before Firo can jump in and get her title shot. But let's talk about the performance real quick. Great work from Firo in terms of maintaining her lateral movement and utilizing that jab and long distance striking to pretty much clip Blanchfield anytime she tried to crash the pocket. We knew Blanchfield would struggle in the striking range, but I don't think a lot of people expected her to not shoot as many takedowns as she didn't, right? Like, she went out there and she tried getting the body lock and going to her takedowns from there, but quickly we would see Firo dig the underhooks, get out into distance. And if anything, I believe Fiorot is the only one that landed a takedown there. You should have seen my reaction when Fiorot landed that takedown in the first round, pretty much putting herself in a guillotine against Blanchfield. And I got flashbacks when JJ Aldrich did that against Blanchfield. And, you know, she had a great first round against Blanchfield and then puts herself in a guillotine and gets submitted in the second round. But great from Fiorot in terms of showcasing her defensive grappling improvements, submission defense, staying calm, cool, and collected in that bad spot. It seemed like Blanchfield really had it on the neck, but Fiorot did a great job in terms of fighting the hands, then getting back to her feet and really just doing solid work with her. We knew what she was going to do with her striking, her jab, her movement, and just staying mobile so that Blanchfield was having trouble in terms of tracking her down. Anytime Fiorot tried or was getting close to the cage, she did a great job in terms of pivoting out and moving laterally to get out of those bad positions. And then anytime Blanchfield came in, she wasn't really throwing straight shots. She was throwing hooks and landing that body kick to the body. She was also throwing that kick to the head sometimes. And we saw that in the fifth round, it paid off for her, but it wasn't enough to actually flatline and drop Fiorot. I thought Fiorot was on skates for a little bit, but she managed to get her wits back about her and then get back to the game plan of utilizing just distance striking, that stinging jab down the pipe, the side kick to the leg, front kick up the middle. She would try to launch in with a 1-2 every now and then. Again, veteran-like performance from Manon Fiorot, out-jabbing the grappler here en route to this decision victory. I was very happy to get her as my dog of the night play at plus 165. I got a lot of crap in terms of taking Fiorot in the spot, but physicality is something that is very prevalent in a women's MMA, and no matter if a fighter comes from a wrestling background, if they're not stronger than the other fighter in certain spots, they're going to struggle to get those positions, and this fight is a perfect example of why that was. Blanchfield will come back. She's still young. She's 24, if I'm not mistaken. She will be able to learn from this. She'll be able to set up her takedowns a lot better, and she could potentially find herself in a title contention spot again in the near future. But this was a good learning lesson for her. She was just not strong enough to compete against Fiorot in this spot strength-wise. But great work from Fiorot, sticking to the game plan, and like I said, out-jabbing Blanchfield en route to a decision victory. All right, let's check out the odds that cashed here. Fiorot money line plus 165 comes through as the dog, by decision plus 330, and then the over 4.5 cashes at minus 115. This event really felt like it was slugging along over the last couple of fights. A lot of controversy in some of them as well, really just took the fire out of the fight, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, it was nice to have it in front of a crowd again, but really not the type of fight or event overall. It started off great, right? As you guys are going to see when I talk about the recap here, we had a ton of finishes early on in the in the card, but just things just got real shaky near the ending there. But regardless, good win for Fiorot. All right, let's put a quick bow on this show. Let's recap the stats here. Knockouts, there were 8 of them on this 13-fight card. No submissions, 5 decisions. And favorites went 7-6. Absolutely insane. A lot of underdogs pulling off the upset here. Obviously, Kyle Nelson, a big one as well. Manon Fiorot, Verna Jandiroba, a ton of them throughout the card pulling off the upset. So very dog-friendly card for anybody that was looking to get some action in on this card. Performer of the night. This one was tough. Again, a lot of weird circumstances, weird scorecards, high pokes, all of that stuff. But I guess the guy that I end up settling on here is Joaquin Buckley. Goes out there as an unranked welterweight, knocks out a past or previous guy that was, you know, very close to title contention throughout his career. Very highly skilled, one of the most violent and meanest fighters we've ever seen in Vicente Luque, and he pretty much muzzled him. Like he did a great job in the first round. 2 judges gave that round to Buckley, but he was putting big power on Luque, and whatever Buckley was doing seemed to rattle Luque, hence why Buckley was able to open up that finish in the second round. So performer of the night for me has got to be Joaquin Buckley. Obviously, you can throw Nate Landwehr there in a runner-up spot. But for me, again, these performer of the night things is more so a complete performance, not just the finish. Obviously, Landwehr's ability to come back and finish was great. But, you know, he was getting dinged up. He was close to getting finished in the early going of that first round as well. Whereas Buckley, smooth performance throughout the entire time that he was fighting and doing it against a guy of Luque's level. Very, very impressive. All right, that's a wrap on UFC Atlantic City. It is currently 1:40 a.m. I'm going to wrap this bad boy up, stitch it together for you guys, and drop it as soon as I can. It's been a long week of great content. Next week, we're right back at it with another packed schedule, I believe. Let me just quickly pull that up in terms of what I got coming up for you guys. Next week, first week of April, we got PFL 1 on Thursday. We got LFA 181 on Friday. We got KSW and Cage Warriors on Saturday morning. And then UFC Vegas 90 Saturday evening, headlined by Brendan Allen and Chris Curtis, a rematch of a fight where Chris Curtis knocked out Allen. And that is actually Allen's last defeat. He's on a streaking run right now where he's finishing guys and really making a name for himself. I'm sure he would like this spot to go out there and avenge the last loss on his record. So PFL again starting their regular season this coming week. I'll have a breakdown for you guys on Tuesday or Wednesday. I'll try to pump that video out for you guys, so stay tuned for that. Otherwise, if you're looking for breakdowns for those other regional events that I mentioned, I'll strictly be posting those on the Patreon page. We killed it on the regional events this weekend. I think it was like plus 10 units or so on regional events. Yeah, so if you wanted some of that, check out the Lock of the Night Patreon page. Otherwise, good night. I'll see you guys on Monday for the UFC Vegas 90 MMA Lockcast full card breakdown. See you then. Peace.